Hi, I'm Sam.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Joe, and welcome to Athenaeum, a podcast about writing, literature, and the culture that feeds them. The music for this episode comes from Ivan Dutch at ivandutch.com. And today, we're discussing Ready Player One. So this is a sci-fi book that you've probably heard of. Ready Player Two recently came out, but this was published in 2011. So, what, over 10 years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
And had a film about it as well. But really kind of the focus is we're dealing with this 2045 world, this dystopia where all of these kind of kids are in this virtual reality and trying to, I almost think of it like a Willy Wonka kind of hunt where they're all trying to win the game so that they can own this multi-billion dollar company.
Mm-hmm.
And chaos ensues because it's a dystopia.
Yeah, and it isn't just kids. There's also a corporation that is trying to get a control of it first. And written by Ernest Cline. Can't forget, because I think there are a couple other books called Ready Player One or similar names. And kind of to kick it off is one of the things I loved about this book is all of the 80s references done so fantastically well, particularly because there's three, don't remember, do they call them Easter eggs? You have to get three keys, and to get those three keys, you have to do different games and interactions. And the really cool thing is that the creator of this virtual reality, James Holiday, he included chunks of his own life. Like, he included scenes from his own life and everything to get to the final Easter egg of the hunt in order to get control of his company was all about his life. And James Holiday, I believe in the book, he's described as being he's described a lot like an autistic character, and I don't think they actually specifically called him that at any point in time. But he was
I don't think so.
No, but I like reading it. That was very much the impression I got because he was hyper focused and into 80s culture. He made the virtual reality really for himself and for others, but like it was his life goal. And then when he dies, his corporation is taken over, basically. So, and it's the biggest thing I think that is interesting is, so 10, 11 years later, we have VR now. And in the book, they talk about these immersive pods. They don't call them a pod. But it's the rigs, immersion rigs, which are now starting to come out as a thing with virtual reality players, which is kind of neat. But the other interesting thing is that this culture, this American culture, has become so intertwined with this VR that they go to school in VR, which is kind of crazy that theoretically, and as we saw in the book, these characters can create completely fake personalities for themselves and live that way for their entire life, essentially, in this book, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Is it that crazy, especially looking at the last 2 years where, like, there's a lot of places where kids really haven't been physically in school? And if you kind of think about the main character, he chooses to do virtual school because he was bullied so much. And in a virtual environment, like a physical school, he was bullied. But in a virtual environment, they can actually stop bullying, right? Like, there's no, like, hidden hallways to be called mean names and be punched in a virtual world.
Yeah.
Everything's under supervision.
I think the other interesting thing, too, with the start of the book is he lives in a trailer park where the trailers are piled on top of each other and they have trailer towers. The logistics of creating such a thing. And personally, I would have been terrified all of the time living in these trailer towers. But I think the other big thing too with Ready Player One is that you see Wade Parzival go through a really big transformation from who he was at the beginning of the book to who he is when he finally gets that golden egg at the end. And I think that's...
I mean, I didn't notice any big character transformation.
I don't...
What did you see?
Well, you start out with a kid who was trying to, you know, find the keys and all of that, but he worked mostly by himself with just a couple of friends. And you see him go from living with his mom and stepdad, right? I think that
his aunt. Her boyfriend.
His aunt and her boyfriend. To leaving there, moving into a fancy building by himself because he is making so much money off of Endgame. And then you see him grow lethargic, you know, to the point where he gained so much weight. And it isn't, there wasn't growth within the game per se. It was more growth of him as a human being having to grow up and realize that his actions do have long-term consequences for himself. And actually, you know, getting to the point where he starts meeting Artemis and Aik and everyone else in real life in order to, you know, stop the corporation from gaining control of everything and taking away everything that they love and know. But I think you get, he learns to work a little bit more as a group. He starts out working with his friends and then goes his own path and kind of comes back around. And there is growth in this character. I think it's a lot slower and it's not like a sharp thing. But you see him just go through these stages in life where he's learning that, oh my gosh, look at how big I've gotten because I don't do anything. And then he gets the immersion and starts working out and makes time to like do better. And he realizes that if he doesn't change his ways, he's going to have to work for the corporation for the rest of his life, like so many other people. And I thought there was growth. Did you not think there was growth, Rob? Did you like the book, Rob?
Well, let's just get into it. I would say I liked the spirit of the book. I didn't hate it, but man, like these first six chapters where he was kind of just, I suppose we're just getting introduced to Wade and his like real world situation. And we're getting some sprinkles of who he is like in the Oasis. They were like insufferable to me. I was so, I don't want to use all of this charge language, but he was just really unlikable to me. I mean, we get all of this like cynicism and just sort of aggressive nerdiness in the opening chapters. There's like a, that scene where he's debating with H on, what was it? Lady Hawk or something like that. And, you know, they start telling each other, you know, like really derogatory language because like one person didn't think the movie was good over other. It was like, I don't know how to describe it, but it was like everything that's like, hesitate to use the word toxic about nerddom. It was really unlikable. And I get that they're like into that, you know, stuff just that much because like that's how much they've been drafted into 80s culture because of a Holiday's Quest. But man, it was not very interesting to read, or in my case, listen to. But overall,
one thing
I
I'll
did.
finish up, sorry.
No. We can talk about the rest of the book later. What
I
did
was
you
gonna
think about the
say,
opening, Joe? Or you, Sam?
I think this book, like as a whole, requires a lot of in like corporate speak, it's like pre-work, but like it requires a lot of homework before you can really value this book. My mom's a big 80s kid, so I grew up around a lot of this, but they're like, if you don't have a lot of the exposure of a lot of the kind of nerdy 80s and early 90s films and songs and video games and everything, this book requires a lot more brain power for me to like gather all of that information that I have somewhere in like a weird box about the entire plot of War Games. I need to pull that out of that weird little box in my brain, or fall into a Wikipedia hole to find it.
Yeah, I
I will
think.
also say, from a like larger scale reception, this book is really polarizing. Some people think it really does a lot of like good from a world building perspective, and like people love it. But there are a lot of people out there, I think more in the camp with you, Rob, that absolutely despise this book, because it does exemplifies kind of everything wrong with nerd culture.
It does do that. And I think, because I love Ready Player One. Not a fan of Ready Player Two, but I like Ready Player One. But I think that Ready Player One got far too popular for what it actually is. It was, in my mind, this book, which came out in 2011, was written for our parents' generations, who were video game people, were movie watchers. They were the super nerds who are now adults and have to deal with real life stuff. And, I've kind of had to, that's all memories for them. I think that's who this book was actually written for. And pop culture got a hold of it and just went wild. And in reality, it's a book that it's a tribute to the 80s through and through. And I like it because I like a lot of 80s stuff. I like watching that old stuff. And I think the writing is good, but yeah, you have to have a lot of history of it. You have to understand what all of these references are. And next time we're going to be talking about the movie, and the movie took a lot of liberties because of that, I think.
I think it's really odd as well that they target, like, this book is written, I think they categorize it as YA. And it came out, again, 10 years ago, but, like, our parents are not really reading YA. So the target written audience and the target, like, style of writing and how it's categorized, like, in your local library feels disjointed to me.
Yes. Well, and I think that it was one, I think it's a case of YA. If your character is a teenager, it gets shoved in YA, and this one shouldn't have been. I to me, this is what I think a lot of those 80s nerds would have wanted their lives to be. Like, I think it reflects what they in their minds, how they actually dealt with being bullied, not having any friends. This is the world that they wish they would have had. And I think you have to kind of, when you're analyzing it, look at it more from that perspective. And it gets to the point, like, they're playing a game for, I think it's the second key called Joust. Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, but have you ever heard of the old arcade game called Joust before?
And that was for the first key.
First key, sorry, first key. But never before, right? Like,
No, I hadn't heard of like hardly all of this stuff that was like, I guess, key to getting the keys. I hadn't heard of it.
And It's to the extent where I went to an arcade bar around New Year's where you pay $10 and play all these classic arcade games, and they had Joust, and not a person I think there other than me knew what Joust was. And it's just a this really this book is so niche. It gets marketed incorrectly. It is for the 80s fans, or for I think people who maybe wish they had grown up in the 80s and could have possibly experienced some of the craze of arcade games and
Atari,
yeah,
the concept.
In other words,
all of these
yeah,
things. Not that
hear that
I'm
Commodore get brought up a lot.
yes. And it's just, I think that's kind of the downfall of this game, of this book, is it's too specialized for the audience that they're aiming for. Because I don't think when it came out, I read it when it came out, but I don't remember too many of my age group when it came out actually reading it. I know Joe did, but again,
Yeah,
you
but
grew
again,
up with it.
right, my mom loves the 80s and the 90s and made me grow up on that, right? And I think we fall into a more niche category that wasn't kind of on our own from a pop culture perspective. I think that's why I'm so surprised, kind of looking back 11 years later and saying, wait, this was a New York Times bestseller?
Right.
How? Right? I thought this would be the kind of book that you would kind of pass along to your friends who are very similar to you. And I don't get it. The plot for me, you guys know that I'm kind of a romance junkie, but the romance does absolutely nothing for
No.
me. This, the pieces of the puzzle don't add up to a New York Times bestseller for me. And so maybe I'm more in Rob's camp of this book was decent for me, especially when I read it the first time as a teenager. But I don't know if I'd recommend this book to a friend.
Oh no. I think this book, a lot of my problems with it, I think, could actually be resolved if these characters were older, or at least if our protagonist was older.
How
Because
much
it's
older?
kind of, I mean, Joe, he's got to be like at least 40. I have such a hard time buying into the idea that a high schooler, and mind you, this wasn't his entire life, like that everybody was obsessed with the 80s. I think when the book starts, it said that Halliday died like 5 years ago or something like that.
Yeah,
And that
it
was
did a few
when,
years, yeah.
yeah, and that was when like everybody, like there was the big craze to get into the 80s because you basically had to understand the 80s to understand Halliday. And if you didn't understand Halliday, you had no choice of winning his contest. Okay. But like to have seen like movies that real living today people haven't even heard of. You've seen them like, I think he said he saw War Games like 16 times to the point that he
Wait,
could
wait, wait.
quote the movie.
Rab, you've never seen War Games?
Have you never seen War Games?
I hadn't
What?
even heard of War Games
How,
until
Rob?
this book.
How do you?
Because I wasn't born in the 80s.
Okay,
I wasn't a
touche.
teenager in the like I don't.
But War Games is
Okay,
referenced in
but
so many modern movies.
sidebar. Don't read Ready Player One in my maybe potentially hot take. Go watch War Games instead. Spend that time watching War Games.
That would be
Because
sure
I
it's
adore
better.
that
It
movie.
is. It's a good movie. It's a really good
It's
movie.
really good.
But no, it was so hard to buy into that fact. And so it's like we're constantly switching between him having like all of this like way before his generation like knowledge, and then he's like doing regular dumb teenager stuff again. Like it to me, I couldn't really get into it.
So I will counter that. I would say I think he does need to be older. I think he should be more 19, 20, maybe mid 20s. But and here's
why. That's not older.
No, no, no. Here's why I think that's his age, because right, so this takes place in 2045, right? I think 24. Yeah. So by that point the 80s were 60 years beforehand, right? Like your grandparents are the only people who remember the 80s. If you take into account that time difference, having them be a younger person makes more sense because I'm sorry, you're not going to get your 80-year-old grandma or grandpa to go into VR. Like I'm sure they would love it. Like, but and maybe they are in there. They never really mention really old people being in this world. But if you take someone 5 years prior to that, right? They're like 15, 14, 15 when this happens. They're in VR. They're doing all this stuff. They, one, have the time available to devote to learning all of these things. And two, like, if you look at what the resurgence of popularity of things, it's not the old people that get into it, right? Like, look at the stupid pants that are back, right? The bell-bottom jeans. Oh. Who is into that? It's not them. It's not, like, above the 25 crowd. It is teenagers. Like, it's...
I fit in with the youth. It's like a 30-year cadence of, like, resurgence.
Yeah, so, like, I think they should have been older because that would have made more sense for a lot of the logic as well as some of the time devotion. But, like, teenagers are the ones that would fit into being able to be obsessed to the point of digging into that history, right? Because there are groups of teenagers who, like, when I was a teenager, I was a super movie buff. I knew when all the movies were coming out. I could guess the year a movie came out, plus or minus 2 years, like, back into the, like, 40s. I don't think I can do that now, but I had the time available at that point and the interest. And I don't know, I think someone, maybe there'd be some people in their 40s, but I don't know if you want those people running, not that you want an 18-year-old or 17-year-old running a company either, but...
Well, I think you make a really good point about, like, the resurgence of trends. And I guess it is cool as a storytelling, as a frame of storytelling to, like, say, like, oh, you've got all these people who... are, like, experiencing this culture and they're getting so into it.
Mm-hmm.
That is super cool, I suppose. Yeah. However, my one contention is, so we're coming fresh off of Hail Mary, Project Hail Mary.
Yep.
And
the best science fiction book that I would recommend to anyone to, like, remind, you know, folks, if you have not listened to the episode.
It was really solid. Yeah, and we talked about it in our last episode. Check that out if you haven't seen it. I saw a lot of kind of similar construction in the way that the narrative is delivered, where you have, okay, protagonist comes up with an obstacle and they have to rely, like, solely on pre-existing knowledge to resolve this issue. So both of those stories, for the most part, don't hinge on characters, like, completely, like, discovering something totally new. Typically, they're going to be trying to, like, arm what they already know, and it's just figuring out, like, the right direction. To me, it was just like, for one, we've got the problem of a hyper competent protagonist who is inexplicably young, and we also have a hyper competent protagonist. I don't know. I'm just not super interested in plots or stories where the character, like, they know a lot of one thing and, like, nothing else. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about the initial, I guess, all of the interactions with Artemis? Because I was kind of lost. Like, he starts off like, "Holy crap, you're this girl that I have this really huge crush on. But I'm going to like deceive you the very first time that I meet you. And then I'm going to tell you that you're gorgeous and you're incredible and you're like everything anyone could ever want." To some extent, I don't know like what is just Klein representing like a standard teenager who, lives his life this way versus what is just really, what I would call not the best storytelling. So what did you guys think of the romance?
Terrible.
Do you guys know that emoji that's just like the two eyes and it's just teeth together? That's just like the embodiment of cringe.
Yes.
Like,
I think this
that
book
is
would have
the
been a lot
only
better
one.
without it. Like, I think the whole,
Right.
all the romance was unnecessary. It was stupid. And then when they meet in real life, it's like, I don't know. I don't remember ever liking the romance. Even the first read through, I remember just thinking it was so stupid. Just.
I felt like checking a box, right? Like, oh, I need to have a book, and to have a book do well, it needs to have some element of romance. So we're gonna make it the cringiest romance that we can. I think it goes back to that kind of like toxic nerd culture
Yes.
where we can sort of take the worst part of like, oh, I can kind of go back and forth on how I'm treating this girl, woman, Artemis. And it's cool because I'm the sad nerd and nobody likes me anyhow.
Do you know who I did love? Ake. How did the audiobook pronounce it? His best friend's code name.
H.
Each.
No, A, like the letter H.
Oh, H.
I guess it was like it had more letters in the actual book.
Yes.
Yeah, this whole time I've just been imagining the letter H.
I liked H, and I would have been much happier if Artemis was just like that troubled friend who was, on the outskirts of the friend group that would appear and disappear and appear and disappear. I think that would have worked better, or, that person you always wanted to be friends with than as a
Right, like
romance.
I think like the I know that like H is a woman, but like the bromance of H and Wade would have been a much better place to put that like that check mark that they're trying to do of like romance,
I do
right?
also, yes, I do appreciate that once, they meet H in real life and, H is a girl, not a guy, like he assumed or she, I don't remember if she had like implied that in the game or what, but
I
they
think the
don't.
avatar is just a like white guy, like normal white guy.
But they didn't try to then make that a romance. That was one thing I did like, is he didn't try and like hit on H after finding out that he's actually a she. Like that, yeah, I would have just rather had more H. H was a good character.
One thing that I was kind of thinking after I finished that would be super just ironic, like funny, is if we didn't know what Wade was like if we didn't ever see him outside of the Oasis, and he has like several moments where he's like worried that Artemis could just be some middle-aged man living in his mother's basement named Chuck. I just thought it would have been so funny if Wade was also
I mean, as well, that's
middle-aged.
where like when he's living in the apartment, it's kind of implied that while he might not be middle-aged, he's basically embodying that, overweight, middle-aged white guy. It is, in this case, blacked out apartment. Like,
Plus, to talk about that for a moment though, because you kind of brought up like how teenagers have the time. They do. I mean, certainly life gets a lot busier once you turn 18. But you've also got a really interesting situation. And this is, reflected in real life in Japan, where they have their I'm not sure if they're all referred to as otaku, but you've got your hermits. Like they have their own word for like essentially shut-ins, like people who totally like detach from society and they just live in, whatever housing they have, and you like never see them again. And they had that in this story. They call them the missing millions or something like that, which I thought was a really interesting concept. Because obviously, if that's already happening in the current day, like, of course, it would only be exacerbated in, a world like this. I think, have really appreciated if our protagonist was, in that class to where he didn't. I mean, like, he flat out didn't have any other social interactions, only. Everything that he knows and does is in the Oasis. To me, that would have made it a little bit more justifiable. Because you've also got Shoto and Daito, who I guess are like, they're right on par with Wade. But
They were a
I
lot
would
more
expect to see a
interesting.
lot more. Yeah, I would expect to see a lot more, specifically, of that subculture in Japan. Sort of dominating this reality.
I think the other thing to that point too is we didn't have any support characters who were, older outside of the Ogden, yeah, outside of Ogden. We didn't see that group, and I think that would have been a good thing to add in.
Yeah,
Appreciated
certainly.
like I don't know, like even just like short stories like fully from some of the like minor characters' perspectives.
Yeah.
I just want to know more about everybody other than Wade. I'm sorry.
Yes.
So what did you guys think of the kind of the setting in and of itself? I mean,
Yo, are you
do you
talking
think
about
the world would ever
Oasis?
get like that? Yeah, like to where we
Okay.
essentially migrate into virtual reality.
I was telling Sam right before we started recording, but okay, 2045, when 2011, when this came out, it felt like a million years away, right? I was, what, 16, and the idea that I would be 46 one day felt like 1 million years away. But now it's 2022, and 2045 is like the foreseeable future. My mortgage will not be paid off in 2045, right? And that's a really weird concept when you're like rereading a book, but also like I want to hope that in the next 23 years we don't screw up that bad.
Well, and I think too that the thing with this world that I don't actually see happening. So now we do have a really big gaming culture. We do have VR. We have some of these, but you also have a really, really big anti-culture of those things still, right? Like, along with video games getting popular in VR, you have so many people now who are doing things outside. They're really into outdoor stuff. They don't spend any time on TV. Like, cable TV isn't even really barely a thing anymore. And
No, it's super lame.
yeah. And it's well it's it, it I that's why I don't think that full-on culture would ever truly happen. I think that would still be a sub portion. Now it could maybe I could see it becoming a thing with teenagers or younger people, but I think at some point that's something that most people would either grow out of or just get tired of. That kind of.
I mean, you think of what got really popular in the pandemic. Like, you had the opportunity to be fully online. What kind of took off? It wasn't a anonymous VR platform or everybody. I mean, a lot of people moved to Animal Crossing for a little bit, and were animals. But the thing that took off was TikTok. where people, from my limited millennial understanding of TikTok, like leaned into the things that they knew to create content.
And
And
hiking. Like hiking got huge in the
hiking
pandemic.
did get huge. TikTok's about hiking, probably also huge.
Yes, probably.
But like people were still, even if they were filtered, even if they were only featuring the good parts about their lives, they didn't try and kind of like shadow their name or their like who they are. They like found something, maybe this is the optimist in me, but like found something within themselves to share with the world, right?
Yeah.
And I think I've seen that on like Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, not as much Facebook, but like people are slowly finding like, hey, I'm really good at or really enjoy baking or reading or doing web design. And then they show that off in like a social media context as like part of themselves that is niche, as opposed to again trying to fake someone else entirely.
Yeah. One of the things that I think was missing is you've got this whole like platform, right? This whole technology where you can essentially turn a server into like an actual like world almost. Where, for the one, where is the original content? I mean, I get that this whole book is like a love letter to the 80s, but like is everything in the Oasis that Wade ever experiences, like it all has to do with the 80s. Like there's no original like ideas being formed in the Oasis. It was kind of strange. But also, you don't have an actual representation of the real world in the Oasis. And I thought that that was kind of missing, specifically in the ending. I guess spoilers, but the ending where you have Wade, like he meets with, I guess, like an AI of Halliday. And he's like, don't spend all your time in here, like I did, go out and have experiences, in the real world. It's like nothing about the Oasis has like represented the real world. I mean, you've got a lot of stuff here that's like emblematic of one time period from the real world, but for example, when they have to find the second key and you need to like accurately quote the entire script of this movie, and you're encouraged to do it like in the exact same way. Like that's a cool idea, don't get me wrong, but nothing about that represents like what people are naturally inclined to do. So I kind of thought that it would be really cool if like the final challenge had people, I don't know, if there was something that you had to do that was like sort of representative of how like you actually live. Like you did have the one thing like where it's like, okay, you have to rely on other people. You need to have three keys to open this gate. But I just would like to see it go a little bit further. Like maybe you show up at a pizza parlor and it's like you gotta figure out what to do. You don't get any instructions. You're just at a pizza parlor. And these guys are trying to like rack their brain thinking like, oh, what happened in that one pizza parlor in that one movie or that one video game? When the whole time, like maybe all they had to do was sit down and grab a bite to eat together. Something like that.
You wanted the sci-fi dystopian book to have a moral.
I want every book to have a moral or a
Aww.
theme. I mean, but it did include a moral. Like it was clearly better from the get-go for them to work together
Oh, yeah.
rather than try and solve all of this stuff on their own.
I think the end thing for this book is this is really a book that to me a parent like gives a child of after they've shown them all of these things and like, hey, this was my childhood, or say you I where I could see this book being implemented is if one day in a college they have a course on 80s pop culture, because it will happen. Like,
They probably already do. My
probably
college
already
had a
do.
class on Beyonce.
Yeah, they probably already do. And this is where, after you have been engulfed into that culture, here you go. And you will then appreciate this book. And it's just, I think it's been oversold. It isn't for everyone. And like, Percival, Wade's not that good of a person. Like, he's not a
No.
bad person, but he's not a good person. He's horrendously selfish and doesn't really think about other people very often. Like,
This book just reminds me too much of like if Willy Wonka had a weird love affair with like pop culture, right?
the best part is that is how people frequently describe this book. USA Today described Ready Player One as Willy Wonka meets the Matrix. Like, when this came
Which
out.
isn't wrong,
No.
but it's just like Roald Dahl did it better. One, two, I feel like a lot of this like world building and like plot, yes, everything is taken from everything else and everything's already been done, right? Like people have been writing down stories for ages and ages, but it feels a little too stolen. Can I say that?
No,
Like
it does.
it's just it feels like, okay, I took Willy Wonka. I love the 80s, so I shoved a bunch of niche knowledge, but War Games isn't niche because War Games is perfect. And shoved that on there, and then I created a world with a little bit of extra help. And maybe
Yeah.
we get hate mail for this, but then at least we'd get mail, right?
I mean, yeah.
Like, this is a polarizing book, and again, when I read it the first time, I fell on the like New York Times bestseller. Like, this is so well done. Also, I don't really watch movies in this day and age, so I'm gonna keep rewatching War Games so that maybe one day I can recite all the like lead characters' lines. But now it doesn't sit as well as it used to. My mom's probably gonna write an angry letter, but that's fine.
No, I mean, I agree. I never really understood, like, I guess the merits of this book, because it's not really saying anything. There's no message. There's no like deep examinations, I guess, about the consequences of living your life this way, either in, completely in VR or like obsessing over someone else's obsessions. I just didn't see any point. Like, I think this would be like this to me, this almost works well as like the backstory for another story. Like, if I guess Ready Player Two was a little bit better than what I've heard that it is, I think that the consequences
And
of
not
this
paying
story
off the
serve
book.
as the, yeah, they serve as a good starting point for a different story. But like, just to tell this story in and of itself, it's basically just, hey, here's how a bunch of nerds won a contest. Now, that's cool, but like, they didn't have to use any of their own like ingenuity. They didn't have to be creative. It was literally just, where do I need to go? That was pretty much like the chief question. And then once they got there, they didn't have any like difficulties outside of, do I know this game? Do I know this movie? They didn't have to learn anything new along the way, just beyond where, like in the Oasis, they were supposed to go. So it was kind of like lacking intention for me. Which is another reason why I kind of wish like a little bit more of the real world aspects were leaned into, like if Wade were middle-aged and maybe like he doesn't want to meet with these other people because like he's been just trying to be a kid again, and he's not creepy, but he's also definitely not a teenager like them. Stuff like that would have been some sources for some juiciness in this story. Like right now, I feel like I just got microwaved, 2-day old roast beef It's like I can see how this story would have been juicy, you know, to once upon a time to certain people, but what I'm getting is just not that.
Rob, that's like just such a precise metaphor, and I can like taste the 2-day-old roast beef. Like, this was good before.
You know, somebody left it out overnight and they didn't even cover it
Shoot.
up. You know, it's
Oh, just it's not the same.
you ever had
And it could
stale
have been
meat?
better.
Yeah.
It could have been better. I will
It
say,
could have been better.
one thing we haven't mentioned is, Rob, you read the audio or listened to the audiobook, and it's narrated by Wil Wheaton,
Who it
who
is.
is in
By
there.
Wil Wheaton. Yeah.
Yeah, he is in the book. He is referenced in the book. Wil
Yeah,
Wheaton,
that
like,
was funny
personally,
too.
is like one of the celebrities that I just kind of giggle every time he kind of shows up in different like books or TV shows or things like that. Because I don't know,
I mean,
he
he's
was
created his
in.
own subculture.
Right. Wil Wheaton made Wil Wheaton subculture,
Yes.
which is such a weird flex, and I am here for it. But he like originally was in Star Trek: The Next Generation, and in a few other things, including America's favorite Flubber. But now I want to go listen to all of the books that he's narrated because I just like love him as a person. But like, what a fun flex that you're just like, hey, I'm a cameo in this book. Can I narrate it? So that is the one thing that I will say from like a cultural perspective, like yay, Wil Wheaton, creating Wil Wheaton culture to be perpetuated forevermore.
Yeah. And you know what? His narration was pretty good. I think it tracked very well with the way that this story was told and sort of just the tone of the story. So, I mean, if you ever want to like listen to this again, I definitely recommend the audiobook. I will say though, I don't blame this on Wil Wheaton himself.
Well, Wheaton's a
The
treasure.
overall, I think the just the way that the narrative itself is laid out, there's not a whole lot of like emotion or action in the narration. So I was actually able to turn it up to 1.5, which is the fastest that I've ever listened to an audiobook, and it sounded natural. So I would say, you know, just be mindful of that if you do go to the audiobook that the storytelling itself is just that flat that you don't expect like an award-winning performance from Wil Wheaton because the material is just not there.
Too bad this book won so many awards.
Yeah.
And it's got so many reviews on Audible.
Don't read the sequel, y'all. Don't
I was prepared to
Okay,
like pick
wait.
up a masterpiece.
Are we ready to do reviews?
I
I'm
think
ready.
so.
Okay, Rob, how many Easter eggs out of 10 Easter eggs would you give Ready Player One?
Me, Ready Player One gets a very warm-hearted, gonna say five. Very
Okay.
warm-hearted five. I don't think it was bad, but there's just nothing here.
Sam?
I give it a 7, but that's because I understood all of the references.
I think I'm gonna shake out to 6 because of like it had a special place in my heart when it first came out. And now it's a little more lukewarm.
Yeah. I'd be curious, like someone who flat out didn't know anything about the 80s. Like, you know, a kid who's like 12 today from, I don't know, Germany, just picking up this book. Like, what would they think of it? That's kind of the problem with leaning, you know, too heavily on references to other things is like you, when they're like essential to the plot like this, I guess it can be hard to you in them over time or if you haven't experienced those references.
I will say one data point I have is my sister-in-law. She is 16. So when she read this, she was 14. I think she gave it a distinct 3 stars. I don't think she's ever seen an 80s movie or knows a ton about 80s pop culture. Again, it's just kind of middle of the road. If you've never heard of it or seen it, like, you just kind of have to trust that War Games exists as a beautiful movie.
I think if I should see if there's a list, and I'm sure a list exists somewhere, of all of the pop culture references made in this movie, like a list of the movies referenced. A lot of these movies are worth watching. Like, they are really good movies. Tron has not aged well, but just because from a movie perspective, one, there a lot of them have really good plot lines. I mean, War Games is amazing. But two, 80s stuff, some of it did have a lot of special effects, but in some ways those special effects ended up aging pretty well because they didn't have the computers to go with them, so they relied on, real world they made for like the Dark Crystal and the Labyrinth. Right, there's no special effects really made with a computer. Those were all puppetry and makeup artists and special effects artists, and they end up aging really well despite how old they are. Unlike 90s films that relied on special effects, like it could be worth just finding a list and watching some of those,
I
like.
will say Schmoop.com has a full Ready Player One references and allusions. It calls it a study guide, but it also it lists all of the books and even references like any song that's referenced or a quote that is actually a quote from Ghostbusters, even though they don't call it as such. So that's a nice like list of 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, like
And
so
good.
much beautiful stuff.
They're good.
Heathers. I love Heathers.
And we also just real quick acknowledge the fact that this whole virtual world was pretty much built by one guy, right?
Yeah.
But it has PvP. Why did he build a world in which he presumably planned to attack other people? Was he a mad scientist?
I would
Questions
argue
must
that
be asked.
Willy
We
Wonka
need
was
to
a mad
get
scientist, and he's just Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka absolutely was insane. I don't think there's any getting around it. But no. Overall, I did come to enjoy the book by the end, but more like despite itself, I think, rather than because of anything that was amazing in it. So, shall we close?
Oh, that's what we got, folks. Thanks for listening. We hope you will join us next time when we'll be discussing the movie for Ready Player One, comparing it to the book, giving our thoughts, opinions, and if Rob actually watches War Games and understands what War Games is by the time he watches the movie, we'll find out. But until then, subscribe, drop a like, and send us any comments on Instagram at Athenium Podcast or our Gmail account at AtheniumPodcastLit@gmail.com. Bye, y'all.
Hi, guys.
Bye.